You look like you've been rocketing to the fourth dimension.
Yeah, something's going on here.
That's what it's like to be rocketing.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. A member of the Carl Gables Group. It's a great pleasure to be here. And it really is it's actually a humbling experience. You know, a lot of people have this idea. We have all sorts of ideas. We have all sorts of old ideas as alcoholics. I'm going to talk about a few of them. They have an idea that it's like an ego thing. I think if it's like an ego thing, you can't really do this deal. Alcoholics just sort of sense that kind of stuff, you know. It's really, I don't know, I always get the sense whenever I'm speaking or going to speak or when I'm done speaking, I'm always humbled by it. I always feel, I don't know, really grateful to be able to be doing this deal. Quite frankly, I'm not a humble guy. I mean, I'm an alcoholic, so, you know, that's the deal. That's part of the problem. And I wouldn't even know how to do, quite frankly, I wouldn't know how to do humble. I had to be humiliated into any form of humble, and I jokingly say I'm going to do my speech on humility, but I never do it with a group this small. But, so I'm going to talk a little bit. I'm going to go over a little ground from stuff we've gone over in the last 11, 12 weeks, and you'll recognize some of the stuff. But I want to focus basically on an aspect of the 12th step, and we'll see how that goes. You know, and that's the deal. And I came in January 25th, 1981, so I've been doing this a little over 33 years, and so this is experiential with me. This is part of my testimony, part of my story. There's no planning involved. I didn't write a script. I mean, I was there when it was all happening most of the time, and I worked this thing out through trials and tribulations. This has been road tested, and as it is in AA, although I listened to a lot of speakers, read a lot of literature, got involved, I learned this thing the way alcoholics ultimately learn these things, by being crushed by reality, crushed into being forced to get down on their knees and surrender even a piece of some of these old ideas that we don't want to surrender, until I finally gave them up one at a time every 10 years or so, until I'm a little bit wiser, I'd like to think, than I was when I first came into the rooms. I thought I knew everything before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I probably did know everything. Unfortunately, that's all I knew. And when you know everything, you know, you run the show, and I was pretty much in charge of this part of the universe. And somehow, for some reason, even though I was brilliant, everything sort of broke down, and I, one night in December of 1980, I sort of died spiritually. It's a great, one of the stories I'm going to read a part of is Bill Dobson's story, and Bill was Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Between 1935 and 1939, they didn't have the big book. As a matter of fact, as you all know, when they wrote this book in 1939, and they say what we always say in AA rooms, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Their path did not include reading the big book. It had to read their path. What their path was to read the Holy Bible. As a matter of fact, Bill Dodson, who was Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, he's commonly known as the man on the bed. And most of you guys have been around here for a while know in most AA rooms they have a picture of Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob sitting down in suits talking to a scraggly old guy who's sitting on a bed, sort of like in one of those t-shirts, you know, undershirts, and reading to him from a book, talking to him, and either Bill Wilson or Dr. Bob has a book in his hands, and that book is the Holy Bible. And as some of you who have gone a little bit further in this deal, to really find out, to do it thoroughly, you know, words like thoroughly, you know, they have words in there like thoroughly. Ignore that. You know. Take what you like and leave the rest, you know what I mean? That's what you tell newcomers. Oh, don't worry about that God thing. Don't worry about the resentment thing. You know, don't worry about the thoroughly. Just do the best you can. You know, just don't drain. You know, thoroughly. You know, and why do they even have that word in there? You know, painstaking. What pains? Get rid of that. You know, you know, and I did a meeting the other day here. I think I was saying, I say, you know, now for me, it's not take what you like and leave the rest. It's take the rest and leave what you like. And because if you're an alcoholic, what you ultimately find out, if you want to make it to the end run, you know, you really want to end well. It really isn't a great thing to be sober for 10 years and then wind up drunk, or 20 years wind up drunk, or 30 years and be a thumb-sucking crybaby. You know, you really want to sort of end well. And it does reach a point in time where you really have to grow up. But there's a separation. I mean, I think in the second step they talk about, and I think they're serious, they talk about a separation of the men from the boys. Apparently, somewhere along the line here, there are people that do AA light and are quite satisfied with just not drinking. You know, and, you know, God forbid anybody should put down the just not drinking club in AA, you know. And there are some people that want to go on, move on. There's a separation. In AA parlance, what they say, and this is scriptural out of the 12 and 12, it says the men are the ones who want to constantly and repeatedly grow in the image and likeness of their own creator. You know, become perfect. Not that we ever become perfect, but strive for that perfection as far as the not that we become sinless, but we sin less. And somehow, you know, some people are, you know, they go on with that deal. There must be some people separated out, you know, and in any event, so Bill Dodson, and as you know, in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, they actually said that the books that we found absolutely essential, I mean, I love these words they use, absolutely essential. Absolutely, we're supposed to do this thing thoroughly. We're supposed to do this thing painstakingly, and the guys who did this thing, who were rocketed to the fourth dimension of existence, who experienced much of heaven, say the following books were absolutely essential. 1 Corinthians 13, the book of James, and Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Of course, nobody talks about it. Well, I talk about it, but, you know, God forbid you should mention something like that. The Bible and Alcoholics Anonymous, they'll freak out, but that's part of the thoroughly thing. That's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's part of the thoroughly thing. But, you know, if you understand alcoholics and alcoholic nature, we're sort of defiant. We do things, you know, you got your program, I got my program. You know, we got 18 different thousand programs here. You know, this is part of the reason why when my wife said to me, my first wife said to me, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I was as sober then as I am right now. Probably a few more brain cells than I have right now. And she said those 12 little words to me. I think only one of them has two syllables. If you come up, you know, here I am, National Science Foundation Fellow, postgraduate work, division chief in the state's attorney's office, going off to try some murder case or something like that. And she looks at me and she says, I just want you to know, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And I get in my car, drive 3 blocks. At the first light, I go, out, what the hell do you mean by that? You know, and so if you have that kind of alcoholic mind where you can rationalize things, in other words, tell yourself rational lies. Tell yourself that they didn't say things that they actually said, or they didn't mean things that they actually meant. I have a sign on my desk, my law office, that says, the truth, you can't handle the truth. Because so often I have people that come into my office with extraordinarily convoluted problems. They all have, you know, I had a gal call me up today. She says, you made an appointment to see me. I said, well, tell me a little about your problem. She says, it's complicated. I said, well, of course, you know, I mean, you're involved, it's obviously complicated. It won't be complicated for me. I can promise you this, it won't be complicated for me. I understand your problem. You're a goof, you know, and you're crazy, and that's the problem, okay? And there's no problem with the world, really, you're just nuts, you know. And, but you see, so they come in and they tell me this story, and it's a wonderful story, and they should really make a movie out of it, and you know, they're a victim of circumstances and it's not their fault, and they wouldn't have raped the dog if she didn't look at him that fun. You know, they got all sorts of, you know, I'm sorry I did it, but you know, it's not my fault. I was dropped on my head when I was, whatever the heck it is. And but they're like in denial, whether you want to call it denial or just crazy or old ideas, they're just blind. They have a spiritual blindness. You know, you can be very intelligent, but intelligence without the spirit, without faith, is just arrogance. And it gets you in trouble because there's a spiritual part of life that I now know. There's a spiritual part that I'm becoming aware of when we become, it says, what is it? Part of having had a spiritual awakening is you awake to the spiritual part of life, which is about 95% of it. The material part has to do with getting laid and, you know, making money and having cars. That's about 5% of it, and that's all horse shit. That's what gets people drunk. That's what they talk about. And, you know, when you go to discussion meetings, they're talking about the car. They're talking about the girl. They're talking about the guy. They're talking about the romance. They're talking about the jobs. All the problems you've ever heard in an A room is talking about chasing that material shit to make them feel that. So all the problems you've ever heard is that addiction. Bill Wilson said the next frontier, emotional sobriety, the real problem had to do with unhealthy dependency. And just like I used to think, and I would argue with you, I couldn't envision life without drinking. I couldn't envision, how is it I couldn't envision life without, I couldn't envision a life without drinking. How could I not drink? And then one day, all of a sudden, I can't imagine drinking again. How does that happen? I went for 30 years, I would argue with you to my death that I can't live without drink. You don't understand, I need to drink. You don't understand, I don't drink because I have problems. I don't drink because I have a problem drinker. I drink because I have problems. My drinking matches my problems. Soon my problems will go away. I won't have to drink. I drank because of her. I drank because I was awake. And all, you got this idea, and you're brilliant, and you're arguing, and you'll get mad at people. You'll break relationships, and you hang out with people that talk like you do. And then all of a sudden, bam, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's 2 weeks down the road, and I can't envision a life without drinking. All of a sudden, a complete change of mind. But now I'm thinking, but I can't envision life without a woman. Can't envision a life without romance. Can't envision a life without money. Can't envision a life without a new car. Can't envision a life without a new job. Can't envision a life without a nicer house. Can't envision, and then I just start stacking all the things that I absolutely have to have and chase in order to be okay. And I never even quite noticed that as I'm gathering up all that stuff, it never makes me okay, it makes me worse. Because then I'm worried about keeping those things and getting more things and better things. And sometimes they get scratches in them, they rust, and stuff happens, and you have to juggle all those things. But you know, I'm a persistent son of a bitch. You know what I mean? I'm not giving that crap up. And you know, the rest of the world, even the non-alcoholics, they seem to be chasing after the same stuff. 2,000 years ago, some guy says, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world if he loses his soul? I lost my soul chasing that stuff about 33 years ago on my knees in my bachelor pad at 3 o'clock in the morning watching a preacher on TV. I lost my soul chasing all that stuff, and I got a lot of it. You know, it didn't help because it never, ever satisfied me. It would satisfy me for a second, for a nanosecond. And so I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous unemployable, and 3 months later I'm underpaid. I'm chasing the same crap that got me in there, but this time without the alcohol. Hanging out with guys that are talking about the same crap, thinking about the same crap, and wondering, how come if I'm not drinking I feel so shitty? And the only thing I ever felt crappy about was that stuff. Every once in a while, guys would talk, you know, that you got to get rid of that stuff. Like they say in the sixth step. You know what they say in the sixth step? It says we don't want to deprive. I love the way AA does it. They do a bait and switch. AA does a bait and switch on you. They tell you one thing to calm you down, and they pull the right. Like they say, what do they say? They say, don't worry about the God thing. And then they write a whole book about God. You know what I mean? And then they say we don't want to deprecate material achievement. Well, that's what it sounds like. They're sort of celebrating. It's a good thing. And then they say, but nobody's made a mess more than guys like us. It's about spiritual values. It says, never did we have enough of money, power, or romance. Can you believe they throw romance in there? I mean, I got to think that the worst thing that ever happened to me in my entire life, up until coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, would be being alive on a Saturday night without a girl. Worst thing for a guy on a Saturday night is being alone without a girl. You know, I don't know anything about women, but you know, from what I've heard, they get bummed out if they don't have a guy. You know, I mean, is that what it's about? Is that what life is all about? You know, who gets, you know, just chase around, get a lot of money, become like that guy Sterling? He's obviously happy. He's got $2 billion. He's 8 years old. He's got $2 billion. He's having a good time. You know, Justin Bieber's having a good time. You know, all the actors having. Is that it? Is that it? You know, having a lot of sex. Is that it? You know, having a good time. So one day, is that the deal? Is that the deal? I mean, what had to happen to me before I realized I was not only powerless over alcohol, my life was unmanageable, but I had to get rid of that old idea that old idea, come to, what is it, I can't remember the way they say it, they say, accept in our innermost selves that we're powerless over alcohol, that I tied in that unmanageability with the old idea that I thought I could drink, that I had power over alcohol. What has to happen to us over what period of time before we give up the ghost on everything else in our life that we think is so important? The sex, the guy, the gal, the romance, the car, the job. And I'm not sitting here, look, I have a nice car, I got a nice house, I have a wife, I have four kids, six grandkids. But you know what it says? It says, see to it, in our big book, it says, see to it, your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. The spiritual always comes before the material. You know, seeking him always comes, you know, first things first was Dr. Bob's way of quoting, you know, Matthew 6:33, the Sermon on the Mount, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. That was right out of the Sermon on the Mount, but we call it first things first. That's where it comes from. It's all over this deal. It's all over this deal. And so, you know, but that takes a long time. That takes, you know, it's tough when you're dealing with alcoholics who are weaned on money, power, prestige, and romance. Weaned on that stuff. I mean, that's why we drink. That's why we go to the bars. You know, so we can dance or find a girl or find a guy or have sex, or, you know, weaned on that whole life, you know, that 1,000 miles per hour headed towards that deal. You know, it's tough when they're sober telling them, you know, talking this stuff, you know. What am I, in church or something like that? You know, and that, isn't that what they talk in churches? Well, maybe they do. That's why the book encourages church membership, by the way. Because anything to get you away from what they're telling you out there in the TV set, which is trying to draw you back. You know, there's a gravitational pull of alcoholism. You can be drawn back into the deal. You can get sober and get intoxicated on the spiritual side and get this thing and then go out there in that world and be drawn back into the deal and either drink or drug or somehow get in a message and say, how did this happen to me? Because you spend 1 hour, if you go to a meeting every day, you spend 1 hour a day in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, maybe hearing stuff like that, but most of the time not. Maybe hearing stuff like this, but most of the time not. And you spend the other 23 hours out there with them, chasing the same stuff that got you in here. And if you're an alcoholic like me, you know, you sort of think you're sort of less than. You know, it doesn't matter how many degrees you have or anything, you just know you're a piece of crap. You know, that's basically the alcoholic. You know, somehow, some way, that's what Carl Menninger said. Alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. You know, they don't think much of themselves. You know, I mean, we lie to ourselves a lot. We say things like, I don't give a shit what they think about me or stuff like that, as we're thinking about what they're thinking about us. And, you know, that's, you know, we all we do is think about how we look and what we have and what people are going to think and all that sort of stuff, which is why we're so prone to peer pressure. We're so prone to get polluted out there, even after we come in here, which is why going to meetings is so important, reading the book and the literature, which is why, what does it say, stick with the winners is so important, because it's so easy to get turned around out there, you know? And listen, we barely see the spiritual side of life in here. We barely, after doing all this stuff, and after going through the training, and going through the steps, and sponsoring the people, we barely sort of see it, and we're still tremendously influenced by that. They're totally influenced by that, because that's all they know. They come to our meetings, you know, and non-alcoholics or whatever, and they hear this stuff and they're amazed. They say, how can people talk like this? Because they don't talk, they talk about, hey, what about them Marlins? How about that Heat? You know, how about, you know, they talk about that stuff. They talk about the stuff that's real important in life. You know, who's going to win? Who is Miss America? You know, what dress are they going to wear to the wedding? They talk about the important things in life. We talk about the bullshit, the crazy stuff in here, the foolish stuff. Foolish stuff. It's foolish to people. The natural man, it's foolish to natural people. The people that are weaned on the world, this stuff is foolish. We should be talking about money, power, and romance, and that's exactly what this book is not about. About that deal. Somehow, some way, at the end of this deal, right after the, I want my point out right after the 11th step, you know, that crazy step that says, now that we finally have a relationship with God, a relationship with Him, what we're constantly trying to do is improve that. And then, oddly enough, right after that, it says, now we have a spiritual relationship. Now we have a spiritual awakening as a result of what? What? A spiritual awakening as a result of a relationship with God. Notwithstanding the fact that atheists will tell you, well, you can be an AA. Well, the truth is, we only have one chapter in the book to atheists. It's called Chapter to the Agnostics. And the only thing it says in that chapter is, get over it. This sort of thinking has to be abandoned. You know, I mean, you know, they seem to think that chapter really says it's okay. No, but the chapter is written to say it's not okay. That's not the AA way, you know. But we have atheist meetings because we're alcoholics. And we don't want anybody not to like us. So I suppose if people came in here and wanted to start a meeting where you could drink also, we'd probably say, well, that's okay, because we don't want people to be pissed off and saying bad things to us, you know. We try to twist this program any way we could. So I'm going to read a couple things. I'm going to read a couple things right from the book. So no matter what I say, this is just getting some straight A. But there's a common denominator here. There's a common denominator in what I'm going to read to you. You know, and maybe you'll get it. I think you will. And I'm going to start off with this part right here. It says, and it has to do. There's a common denominator which bears upon the 12th step. Okay? It says, this is from page 63. When we sincerely took, you know, this is the part where it says selfishness, self-centeredness, drawn by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, we step on toes of others, they retaliate. An alcoholic is an extreme, you know, they retaliate usually without provocation, but we see sometimes in the past, once we get past the selfishness, because if you're an alcoholic, if according to this book, you're selfish and self-centered. Now, I know that you're a great person and you're not selfish. Because I'm a great person, I'm not selfish. You know what I mean? I'm a great, wonderful, nice, I just want a nice world. I love people. I'm a nice guy, just like you. But the book said we're full of shit. You know, so you got to decide what you're going to go with. The fact that you think you're fantastic or the fact that the book says you're a selfish son of a bitch. Now, my wife, who's an Al-Anon, has trained me on this. She's very good at, she does great Al-Anon 10th step. When I'm wrong, she promptly admits it, you know. And she's got my grandkids trained, you know. They come up to me and they say, Grandpa, a little five-year-old, you know, comes up to me, Andre, Grandpa, he says, what kind of fish are you? I said, I don't know, honey, what kind of fish am I? You're a selfish. That's right, honey. Grandpa's a selfish. You've been talking to Grandma, right? Yes, she said you're a selfish. Well, she's right. You know, because, you know, what happens is, well, you got to see, you know, how do we get a new perspective by 100 forms of humiliation to final question of our self-sufficiency? Because over a period of years, you know, what it says in the book, it says what we ultimately see in the fourth, the fifth step, and as we go on in life, because, you know, people like me, I don't learn after being banged on the head one time or two times or five times. It's after 10 years, the 20th time for the same thing. I say, you know something? I think I have a problem with spending money. I make all this money and I'm always broke. I went up to my sponsor. He says, you know, Russ, when you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. I said, what's that? You know, I mean, I don't understand, you know. It takes me 9 years to figure out what they're learning in kindergarten, you know what I mean? Why am I broke all the time when I'm making all this money? Because you buy cars you can't afford, you live a dishonest life, but what does that have to do with drinking? It has nothing to do with drinking, but it has to do, drinking's a symptom, it has to do with being restless, irritable, and discontented, it has to do with having a crummy life, it has to do with living in fear and anxiety, it has to do with being up at 3 o'clock in the morning, it has to do with old ideas, it has to do with being addicted to living a crummy life and spending more money than you are because you feel so crappy about yourself that you got to buy stuff you don't need, spending money you don't have to impress people you don't like because you think so crappy of yourself that you're not going to be okay unless you have a new suit or new clothes or a new car or new shoes or whatever the hell it is you think you need to prove something to somebody that isn't even interested in watching you. But that's not Alcoholics Anonymous, is it? Well, that's the real disease that centers in the mind, not the body. And that only takes about 25 or 30 years to get rid of that. And most people drink before they even get that deal. You know what I mean? They're just, they never get to see that. But ultimately, you do see. It becomes clear that you see that decisions based upon self has put you in a position to be hurt. A position for people to hurt you. That decisions based upon self has put you in that position. You don't know you're making decisions based upon self. You're just making the best decision that you can make at the time that seems like the best decision for you. I've never made a decision where it wasn't a decision where I wasn't going to win. I never said, I'll do this decision, it'll really screw me. But I'm going to do it anyway because it's the right thing. I always somehow figured out with my rational mind that if I do it this way, it'll be better for everybody, especially me. You know what I mean? And I won't get hurt, you know? But I'm not selfish. I'm a nice guy. It says we must get rid of this selfishness. Forget the booze. Forget the booze. We got to get rid of this selfishness. How do you get rid of something you don't even know you have? You don't even know what it looks like. Because you're not doing anything different than Ralph did or all the other guys you know did or what they're doing at AA. How do you get rid of that stuff, you know? It says, you know what it says? It says we must or it kills us. He says, you know what it says? It says God makes that possible. That's what it says. No other way again. God makes that possible. Believe in God makes that possible. Because you'll never do it if you don't believe in God because you're so scared that you won't have control. You'll always make a selfish decision, worried about your own well-being, unless you believe in God and you'll say, you know, this doesn't look like it's going to help me, but you want to know something? I'm going to do it anyway because it's the right thing, and whatever happens, God will take care of it. Unless you have that other thing that gives you the courage to make that decision, you ain't never going to do it because you're just too bloody scared to do it. You know, that's the deal. It says this is how and why we've got to quit playing God. Let him be God. You know, that's the archway of freedom. And then it says after that, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. You need to have some remarkable things happen in your life. You want to have a remarkable life. You want to be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. You want to experience much of heaven. You don't want the standard 90% of the people AA thing, not drinking, going to meetings, hanging in at 14 years old. How you doing? Hanging in there, one day at a time, you know. Sounds like fun. I was sitting with a guy in Denny's. I tell this story, you know, Denny's when I was about 5 years sober. And it was a Saturday night. No gal, no nothing. Saturday night, I'm with this young guy. Just taking him to a meeting, his first meeting. And we're at Denny's. It's 10 o'clock at night. I'm drinking coffee. I'm talking to him about whatever the A stuff we're talking about, you know, involved me. He looks at me. He says, you know, that meeting was really good, but what do you do for fun? I didn't have the heart to tell him that I was having a great time. Today, buddy, this is it, man. This is like AA Valhalla, two drunks talking to each other. He was looking for the gals, you know. He was going, you know, Vegas, you know. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He's not even higher power. He's the highest power. Only one highest power. Figure it out. Can't be two highest power. You know, one highest power. Not a tie. You know, we call him God. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. He'll give you everything you need. All you have to do is stay close to him and perform his work well. How would you like to have everything you need? You know something? I have had a lot of stuff happen to me over 33 years. I mean, cancer twice. I mean, all sorts of stuff. Financial debacles, all sorts of stuff happening. You know, he's never left me. I've had people leave me. I've had people disappoint me. He's never left me. He's always provided what I needed, always. He was always there, you know. I've always striven, you know, but the only thing he wanted me to do was keep close to him. I don't want to get too far away from him because then I'm like on my own and I don't do well on my own and perform his work well. Guys come up to me and they want to talk to me about all sorts of stuff, gals, and I say, well, tell me what this has to do with his work. Because I read a book where it says the great fact is this and nothing less, and then it says the central fact of our lives today is that God lives in our life, and he, in our hearts and minds, we are absolutely convinced he lives in our hearts and minds in a way that is indeed miraculous. So I always thought this was a God thing. I always thought that our job now is to be of maximum service to God and other people. That's what I thought this was the training for, a royal priesthood. That's the way I was taught. I didn't know this was about getting sobriety to go out there and rip, rape, and run and live the same crappy life you lived. I thought you found some people you wanted what they had. I didn't know this was a thing where you came in here and you just wanted to get back what you already had. I thought you found people that had something that you wanted that they had, and you're willing to go to any length to get it. Not stuff that, not that you wanted to get back what you already had, which didn't work for you. I mean, that's what I was taught. I mean, it's not that I was surprised. It says, he says, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on this footing, we became, now listen to this, we became less and less interested in our, now listen to this 12-step stuff, less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. Can you imagine that? You know, one thing I noticed, and I'm not deprecating newcomers. I was a newcomer. I did it for 10, 15 years, whatever it is, the same deal. But the one thing is, if you go to meetings, you listen to newcomers, I'll tell you one thing. They are very interested in their feelings and what's going on in their life. You ever notice that? Man, they start on a roll in a meeting. You wouldn't believe what happened to me today. And they'll give you every, man, you don't miss. It's like from the day they, from the moment they got up and they went to sleep, you're going to get every detail of everything that happened to them. Man, they are like videotaping their crappy life and what's happened to them in their mind and spewing it out to you, you know? And of course, you're loving hearing about this shit, you know what I mean? And you said, somebody get a rope on this guy, you know? And, you know, where's his sponsor, you know? Isn't he supposed to listen to this stuff, you know? And it's all about, and then she did this, and then they did that, and then I went into my spine, and then he did this, and then you got to listen to me, because they got a story. They are very much self-involved in that deal. And you know what it says here? It says, established on this footing, we became less and less interested in our... Can you imagine that? Less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. You know how you know the leaders in alcohol? You know there are leaders in Alcoholics Anonymous. Did you know that? They're servants. The leaders are the servants. You can always tell a leader. They're interested in helping other people. Sure, we all go to meetings because we need meetings, but there's a difference between I need a meeting... and going to a, waking up and going to a meeting to see whether there's anybody you can help. There's a difference in the motivation. There's a difference in going to meetings because you're going nuts and you need some relief and you need to tell people what's going on and you need to dump your shit and going to meetings to see whether there's anybody in pain that you can help. There's a difference in the motivation. There's a difference in the person. It says, established on such a point, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans, designs. More and more, we became interested. You start interested and see what we can contribute to life and other people. You know, the reason, that's the difference between me and the guy in that Denny's. He was having a bad time because he was thinking what he could do to make himself happy. He needed more stuff. And I was having a good time because I was there trying to help him. And I didn't even know. I didn't say, gee, I'm there to try. I was just having a good time because I had been transformed by that spirit that transforms all of us. You know, like that guy who followed Mother Teresa around from the New York Times while she went through the slums, and he looked at her and he says, you know, I wouldn't do what you did do for $1 million. She said, neither would I. You know, because the people that get involved in this thing, they get involved, they become transformed, and it becomes a way of life trying to help other people, and there are benefits to that. God honors that. You know, just like there are decisions based upon self that puts us, that we made based upon selfishness that puts us in a position to be hurt. There are different decisions we now make based upon selflessness that puts us in a position to receive blessings. That's how you receive blessings. That's how instead of having those voices in your head as you're showering up saying you're a piece of shit and why aren't you dead and you wish you were dead and you'll never be okay and all those condemning voices telling you you're a piece of crap, you know what I mean, that forces you to do all the crap you do and be the way you are and feel the way you feel, all of a sudden they're replaced by those voices saying, you know, the Lord loves you, you're a good person, you know what I mean, and everything's okay, and you're doing just fine. You know, I got to tell you something, depending on what voices are talking to you, it has a great deal to do with how you feel about yourself and what comes out of your mouth and how you talk to other people and how you feel about other people. And it has nothing to do with drinking, except at the very end, if you don't take care of it, you're going to drink. It has to do with living a quality life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence. Are you conscious of His presence all the time? Are you conscious? Are you always conscious of His presence? Now you may not be, because you know having the spiritual awakening and do the 11th step is about becoming conscious. They talk about it in the 11th step. They talk about a new, different type of thinking. Not the kind of thinking that you're involved in, what's going to happen tomorrow, what happened yesterday, what am I going to do about this, what am I going to do about that. The sort of thing that's called inspirational thinking. to kind of think where all of a sudden you're doing things and saying things that are absolutely incredible. You're reporting it to me. You wouldn't believe what I just did, what I just said. And you say things like, this is what you say. You say, I did this and I said this. And he says, and it wasn't me. It wasn't me. I mean, I see newcomers come to the meeting when they first get this inspirational thinking where they say the perfect thing in the perfect situation where they normally blow up. And they say things like, and she said this and I said, and I said this. And it was like perfect. And then they say, and you don't understand, it wasn't me. That's not me. And it's not them. It's him. It's him through them. You know? And they think it's wild. They think it's so wild, they can't wait to report it as to what they did and what they said. And they're just amazed before they're halfway done. And you know what the big book says? It says that sort of thinking, inspirational thinking, becomes a working part of the mind. That's the way you think all the time. Which doesn't require much thinking. I mean, to have an incredible life, believe me, the less thinking, the better. You'd be surprised how well you can do with little thinking. I don't know about you, but every time I felt bad, it was always preceded by a whole lot of thinking. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter we were reborn. Now, how would you like that deal? How would you like to lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter? How would you like to stop worrying? Okay, I mean, I know you don't drink, but do you worry? Are you anxious? Do you ever think about things that bother you? How would you like to get rid of that crap? Have the peace of God come upon you and all that sort of stuff. I mean, drinking isn't even in the picture. You know, that's what this thing is all about. It makes no sense to hang around here when that stuff's available. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. We are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. That's, by the way, in our big book. Now, I know I talk a lot about God, you know. I know I do that. I know it's supposed to be 12 steps, and all I do is talk about God. You get a whole meeting about God. But I forget, sort of evens out for all the meetings where they're not talking about God. See, I mean, it ain't going to kill you, you know what I mean? Don't worry. You can go to the other meetings, they're not going to talk about God. They'll talk about resentments. They'll talk about this. They'll talk about that. Some guy will talk about God, and they'll say, we don't talk about that in here, you know. And it'll sort of like, you know, it'll sort of dilute it. The God thing will sort of dilute out. It'll just be your God thing for, like, the week or something, you know, for the month. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we're now in a different, and besides, it's not me talking anyway, it's me reading. It's reading, you know. They say, oh, I love when you said this. I said, you mean when I read from the big book? Just, yeah, but it's the way you read. You mean read it so you actually hear it? Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. If we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in a world to play the world role He assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, perform His work well, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? You know what He wants us to do? He wants us to serve other people. I can tell because that's what the whole book is about. It's about serving other people. That's what He wants us to do. That's what He wants you to do. I'm constantly sponsoring people that have 5, 10 years and they're all screwed up. I ask them how many people they're sponsoring, what they're doing in service, and they look at me like with a blank stare. They say, no, I got to tell you about my business. You know, I really have a problem with my marriage. You know, they want to tell me, you know what they want? They want a psychiatrist. They want to tell them about their problems. You know, they don't want to hear about service and helping other people. They want to use me as their sponsor to make them feel good as they're living a selfish life. They say, I have this life, it's a selfish life, I don't care about sponsoring people, I don't care about extra credit, I don't care about making coffee, I don't care about going at that, I want to make money, I want to do this, and I'm feeling crappy lately, and I want you as my sponsor to help me feel better. You know? I say, how can I make you feel better? You're a goof. You're an idiot. You know? You deserve to feel exactly the way you feel, like a selfish person should feel. You, as far as I'm concerned, you're still drinking. You're not even sober. You know, you know, and soon you will be drinking. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The Virgin of the Ages said, faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate to us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. You want to outgrow fear? You know, serve others. Trust Him. Serve Him. Do what you think God wants you to do. You know what God wants you to do because you know godly people. You know people all over this world. You know, you know the Donald Trumps. You know all the basketball players. You know all that. You know what they're all about, okay? And then you know the people that people look up to and praise, and you know, you see what they're doing. You know what they're doing. You know, it's not about the money for them. It's about helping other people. You know what you're supposed to be doing. Then it says, never avoid these responsibilities. This is our big book. A kindly act, somehow worshiping God, performing his work, trusting in him, doing the same thing, is inextricably tied into helping other people. You can talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? Believe me, when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. You know, that's just the way it is. A lot of people have a lot of things to say, but they're not doing. It says, a kindly act, listen to this, a kindly act, this is our big book, a kindly act once in a while isn't enough. Did you hear what I just said? Listen, I'll say it again. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. I mean, I know, here's what, if you're an alcoholic, how can you say, well, I'm a nice guy, you know, I mean, the guy in the corner, and I always do this, I always give money to the guy in the corner, you know, the guy with the sign. I know he's got more money than I do, and he's got a Jag, you know what I mean? But I figure he's willing, you know, I always give money to the guy in the corner. You know what it says? It says a kindly act once in a while isn't enough, which is shorthand for saying it ain't enough. It ain't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. You got to be the Good Samaritan every day, which is tough to do if you don't know what the Good Samaritan is. But in order to be the Good Samaritan, which is a capital G and a capital S, the good Arab, it's not really an Arab. It's a Samaritan. It's a whole different type of creature, you know. But in order to be the Good Samaritan, you'd have to know what a Good Samaritan is. But in order to know what a Good Samaritan is, which refers to the parable of the Good Samaritan, you'd have to read the book of Luke. But you're not going to read the book of Luke because it's not conference-approved material. Luckily for us, the conference wasn't there when Bill Wilson was, trying to get sober, you know. It was just Father Ed Dowling and all those guys, Sam Shoemaker. You have to act a Good Samaritan every day if need be. You know, you better find out what that Good Samaritan is and what that's all about. You better read that deal. If they say that's what you got to be, and you're interested in this, and you want to do this thoroughly, and you want to be painstaking, and you're serious, I guess you'll probably say, well, what is that Good Samaritan? I think I'll read that just for the heck of it. You have to have the Good Samaritan if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep. Get that? Many nights' sleep. Great interference with your pleasures. Great interference with your pleasures. Interruptions of your business. It may mean sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and the asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. Well, hell, my wife always says that. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a match. You may have to fight with him if he's violent. Sometimes you'll have to call a doctor and admit. We don't do any of that stuff. I'm not saying we don't. I know a lot of people in here do that stuff. But the bottom line is 89% of alcoholics don't even know that exists. They forget, isn't that for treatment centers? The way I was brought up, I did that stuff. I do that stuff. You know, the bottom line, and I'm not bragging, I'm just reporting. My sponsor, these were never my ideas, this was always my sponsor's ideas. They had me making coffee, they had me doing stuff. So what am I doing this? I went to my sponsor, I was telling him about money one time. I was complaining about it. I had real problems. And he said, you know something? He says, what? He says, you know, I think it's time you started making coffee with the group. I said, coffee? I said, this guy's crazy. I'm dying here, you know what I mean? I started making coffee for the group, started making the coffee. One time I didn't want to go to the meeting, but I had to go because who's going to make the coffee? And then one guy came up and he says, I'll make the coffee. I says, this is my job. I'm the coffee maker. Then I was 18 months sober and I was making the coffee for 18 months. And I said to my sponsor, I said, I can't make this coffee anymore. I got easy. He says, well, I asked him, you make the coffee. Nobody wants to make the coffee. He says, Russ, these are alcoholics. Nobody's going to volunteer. Just announce that next week you're not making coffee. Somebody will step up. He told me to get on relay. I got on relay. Every night, every Friday night from 11 o'clock at night till 8 in the morning, if anybody called in Dade County, Alcoholics Anonymous, they got me for 8 years. 8 years! Guy calls me up, he says, I'm on 33rd Street and what avenue? It's 3 o'clock in the morning and I need to go to detox. I said, well, it's 5 miles away. If you start walking now, you'll make it. He said, well, that's not the way we do it in Connecticut. You know, he says, I said, well, you know, we're not a taxi cab company. He says, what's your name? He says, Russell. Russell what? He says, just tell him Russell. I'm the only guy. He said, you're not going to report me now. I wouldn't want to lose this job, you know. You know, I mean, hey, it was a lot of fun, you know, but I did it for 8 years. You know, I did that stuff. Here we go. Here. Never avoid these responsibilities. Okay, let me read just a couple more things, then we'll finish up on this thing. But you see, this is the stuff, you know, you start asking yourself, why do I feel the way I get these guys that come up to me. You know, and they're 6 years sober, 7 years sober, 8 years sober. And they want to know why they have these problems while they're talking to me about all their problems. And of course they're talking to me about all their problems because they have all this time to think about their problems. You need to spot. If you want to, you need to have at least three guys calling you up every day that are committing suicide. You know what I mean? Or trying to. And in order to do that, you got to sponsor 50. You know what I mean? You can't sponsor one. You got to sponsor 10, 20 in order to get three guys that call you up and say, I'm going to kill myself. You got enough guys calling you up saying they're going to kill yourself and jump off a roof. You don't have time to think about your shit. You know what I mean? You're so lucky. Let me tell you something. You're so happy you ain't them. You know what I mean? Your life is like golden, you know? Okay, here it is. This is Bill Dotz. I'm going to read two more things and we're out of here, okay? This is page 191. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. You know, a lot of people sort of worship Bill Wilson. I mean, he's a wonderful guy. Did a lot of things, you know, whatever. You know, the bottom line is he was an alkie. He was a drunk just like us. He's a bad drunk, you know? God touched him, used him for a purpose, you know, and he was, him and Dr. Bob, the personification of what happens in this program. You really want to be like, you want what they had? You want to be like them? You want to experience what they had? This is what they had. This is Bill Dotson, the guy in the bed, talking to you about Bill Wilson. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, or something I thought a person ought to have. He was sitting there, he was about 3 weeks sober, he could see Bill Wilson, he knew there was something Bill Wilson had that he wanted. I was trying to find the answer, I knew there was even more, something that I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill Wilson was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her this. This is what Bill said. He said, Henrietta, the Lord, I guess there was nobody there to tell him, you're not supposed to say that, but he said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling other people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program for me. For all these leaders, for all these guys that really get this thing, that is the deal. That is the deal. And I hang out with people, and these people come up to me, and they're not doing any of this stuff. They're not interested in what the Lord wants them to do, or they're not grateful for you. But you know what they are? They give it all lip service. You can tell me you're grateful till the cows come home. If you're not there helping other people, you know, all it is you're just staying sober in order to help yourself. This is the last thing I'm going to read. He sold himself short. This is one of these cowboys that got sober early on, you know, when they were still talking about God and stuff like that. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I'll always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods is not great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, now get this, above all, if you'd like to have what this guy has out of this deal, isn't that what you like? really go to meetings? You really want to go to meetings so you can, at 15 years, hang in there, you know? Be worried, be anxious, you know, you don't want to wear life like a loose garment. You don't want to be at peace with yourself and other people. You really want to run around the planet in bondage to worry about what other people think about you and all that sort of stuff. You don't want to know that new freedom and that new happiness. You don't want to lose fear of people and of economic insecurity and their judgments. You don't want to have that happen to you. I'm not talking about once in a while. Hey, I experienced the promise for an hour last Thursday. You don't want to live that life always. You don't want to be always in that deal. You wouldn't like that deal. You don't want that deal. Are you crazy? You must be nuts. What kind of alcoholics are you? I was an alcoholic. I always wanted to feel that way. You got a shot of feeling that way? You know what I mean? And you want to turn your back on that? Unbelievable. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. Here's the greatest thing. They're linked. The love and understanding of a gracious God. Yes, God. Who lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap. Cured me of this disease. To a position of trust where, to perform his work well, right, I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and serving them as I can. So I don't know what fellowship you're in. I mean, just because I'm standing in the garage doesn't mean I'm a Buick. You know what I mean? I mean, I know you're here, I know there's an A meeting, but I don't know what fellowship you're in. You know, you ain't serving. You ain't performing his works. You're just the drunk sitting in an A room. You're not in this deal. As far as I'm concerned. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that to make anybody feel guilty, but if you do feel guilty, like my sponsor said, you probably are. You probably are. Wouldn't kill me to make you feel guilty, you know, because... You know, the bottom line is, you know, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause is, probably something wrong with you, so you ought to examine that. You know, you ought to think. Now, the guys that are doing this stuff, who's done this stuff, they know what I'm talking about. They know what the deal is. I want to see you guys. You see, the reason I say this crap, nobody else is going to say it to you. You know, they're all going to say that guy's full of shit. But listen, the reason I say that is because I want it for you. I want, because you got to have this, and one of the reasons you got to have it is so you can go out there and tell other people without fear, because nobody's talking about this stuff. The way, I mean, it's just not happening, you know. I mean, other people are talking about it. I'm not the only one talking about it, but you understand. I don't want to be too hard on you or anything like that, but that's the deal. This is it. I mean, I read it, you know, you may think this is my opinion, but I read this stuff from, I read it from the book. They were tougher than I was. These are the guys that made you get down on your knees. I'm like nothing. I'm like a squirrel compared to these guys. These guys were really rough. You know, they were going out to hospitals, and you heard what they were doing. You know, that you heard the stuff they were doing. So God bless you. Thank you very much. Oh.